Okay, now slowly bring both feet to stand, so both knees are up in the air, so you just feet are hip-width apart.
Are you feeling the pull of gravity on your body, hunched over a computer too long, or maybe troubled by an old injury? There are a whole range of treatments and activities you could try.
Just feel the weight of your right leg and your left leg and notice whether you are comfortable.
This is one of them. It's a Feldenkrais Awareness Through Movement lesson. And Feldenkrais is the focus of this edition of the Body Sphere.
So you let it float and you let the lower leg hang, so your foot hangs.
Hello, Amanda Smith with you here on RN.
Right hand and place it below your right knee. And just guide your right knee just a little bit closer.
As well as having a therapeutic application, the Feldenkrais method can be used in the training of athletes and dancers and actors and singers.
So, maybe we can pay attention to the way you're using your air and the way you're using your belly wall. So maybe get a hand on your belly and just make an S sound and just feel the belly wall coming in.
Now, before we get on to more about what the Feldenkrais method is and how it's used, what about the person behind the name, Moshe Feldenkrais, who lived 1904 to 1984?
Well, Feldenkrais actually is one of the more interesting figures of the 20th century.
This is Frank Wildman. He's a leading teacher of the Feldenkrais method, based in the USA, but teaches around the world, including here in Australia. And according to Frank Wildman, Moshe Feldenkrais was a true polymath.
And a lot of people, of course, would have not heard of him, but several things that he's done is he brought judo to the Western world. He studied directly with Professor Kano in Japan, who he met in Paris. Why? Was that Kano was a physics professor, and the new physics was starting in the 1930s, you know, relativity theory, quantum mechanics. Feldenkrais was part of the new physics. He actually headed the Curie's laboratory, helped develop radium. And so he was a very prominent physicist. He spoke seven languages.
Yes, now he was Russian-born, lived in Israel, in the new ways, Israel.
Yeah, he had to get out of France when the Nazis, you know. And so he went to England and he worked on anti-submarine warfare on the coast of Scotland in a sort of very secret place that nobody knew where this was or what they were doing. And while he was there, he had people stand on a sonar device, a plate, and above them was another plate, and they could send sonar signals down through their body. And he thought, this is really interesting, because he got to then understand from the sonar, better than an x-ray, a whole body x-ray, what their posture was like. He could see where was there a different impression of the sonar, where there something in their body would make it just incongruent. And he got very interested in how could you alter this? What could you do for these people? So he began to work with their head, their neck. A lot of them had forward heads with forward shoulders. Physicists studying hard, you know, and producing things that way. And they would find great relief to their backs and all kinds of things would be better. But he thought it was pretty obvious, but it wasn't to them. It was a mysterious kind of thing, but it worked. And he began then to develop his own way, which is now called the Feldenkrais method.
Well, now, your background is as a dancer and choreographer, Frank, with one of the pioneers of contemporary dance, postmodern dance, Anna Halperin in San Francisco. But you also studied with Moshe Feldenkrais over 10 years. What took you in that direction?
A big part of my background, yes, dance and performing arts and things like that. But also, I have an undergraduate degree in biology. So I was always interested in somehow trying to figure out how to integrate biology with movement. Like, how do you move differently? Or why do some people never hurt? Other people really hurt a lot. In any case, Feldenkrais had a training program in San Francisco. This is back in the 70s. His introduction to the group, there were about 60 of us. He announced, "Ugh, I have to waste my time teaching you. This should not be just you. This should be on Telstar." Telstar was a big thing back then. You know, the idea that you'd have satellite communications was just in the beginning stages. And this should be on ComSat and satellites all over the world. That's how important it is. It would change the way everyone feels and thinks.
All right, so what's the purpose of the Feldenkrais method then? What's the aim?
So most people have a quantitative notion of their body. In other words, if you want to exercise, let's say. It's how much, how many repetitions, how long a period of time, that kind of thing. And everybody's interested in the quantities of what they're doing to measure their own improvement. Problem is, let's take strength. You can lift so much now. And
What I can bench press.
Exactly. And a lot of people, as they get stronger, injure themselves more because you see you have stronger muscles. And if you have bad coordination and lousy posture, all that strength works against you. It's just simply pressure into your joints and pulls on your connective tissue. So the Feldenkrais method is interested in the body of quality. How smoothly do you run, walk, or do whatever? And how can you develop your skills in the way that you move, which will make you functionally stronger? You'll be able to do more, you know, from skilled athletes to dancers to, I mean, just anybody, you know, the person who just had enough pain or they don't know how to improve their tennis game, that kind of thing. Or they swim, but not that well. And to understand, oh, yeah, there's something I can learn that's deeper than having a coach teach me.
Now, I want to find out a bit more about how Feldenkrais is particular. Say, most of us, when we think about posture, you know, you think pull up, shoulders back, tummy in, and you try to hold that in something of a state of tension, actually, until not too far down the track you forget about it and it all sort of falls away again.
Yeah.
In Feldenkrais, how do you approach ideas about good posture?
So most people, especially around posture, stiffen themselves. They try to force their body to fit some ideal, what they think is an ideal, mechanically, like a set of bricks. This is stacked above that, and your joints all the way up to your head and neck, right? It's just a stacked up thing. But we're not bridges or buildings. We're living organisms that change all the time. And so what we try to do is help people learn without will. A lot of people use willpower to do anything with their body. I must do it the right way. Like the teacher, almost everything is monkey see, monkey do. You try to put on the teacher's body, basically. And Feldenkrais's stance on posture is, what's the position that you can be in so that you have the least amount of effort to go forwards, backwards, jump, get down to the floor, sideways, all cardinal directions of motion, turning. What is the position where you can do that? Because that's what they did when he learned judo way back in the 30s. And so that if you approached your opponent, you could see they're biased to move to the left, not the right, right? They're biased to turn that way, not the other way. So that you could then go in and feel for those things and take them further into their habits, whoops, down, you know? And that idea is his idea of posture.
And just bring your right knee up to the side.
On RN, on air and online, this is the Body Sphere.
Yep, so great. And now lengthen your right leg again. Just do this a few times, so you straighten.
Amanda Smith with you, and I'm trying to find out what the Feldenkrais method is as a way of understanding and using your body better.
Notice what happens to the pelvis. And once again, we're working with this idea of what's going to lift away from the ground. How are we going to overcome gravity pulling us down? So press the inside edge of your right foot a number of times, and just notice where in your trunk do you feel a response.
Susan Hillier is Associate Professor in the School of Health Sciences at the University of South Australia. She's also a Feldenkrais practitioner with a background in rehabilitation physiotherapy. Susan, the Feldenkrais method, what's your take on it? Can you have a go at explaining it?
I can give it a go, and it is hard to explain. Because it's experiential, so it doesn't lend itself very well to something that can be articulated. So, and I think that even tells us something about our culture, is that we don't often articulate what we're feeling. And that's not just feeling in terms of emotions, it's feeling in terms of what we're sensing. In this instance, sensing about our bodies, where we are in space, what our bodies are doing, which direction they're moving in, you know, what kind of shapes we're making, what postures we're producing and holding. So we're not used to articulating those things. So if we're now talking about a method where we're practicing sensing those things, then it becomes even more difficult to explain. Then people say, well, why would we want to know those things? Why would we want to be aware of where we are in space? And that you know, it comes down to the whole question of awareness. If we know what we're doing, this is a Feldenkrais quote, if we know what we're doing, then actually we can do what we want. And if we're not aware of what we're doing, chances are we're doing something that's very habitual. We're probably maintaining a less than ideal posture, or we're walking in a less than ideal way simply because that's what feels normal to us and we haven't stopped to pay attention to what we're doing and could we do it better.
So how does Feldenkrais differ from perhaps other movement systems, maybe physiotherapy or maybe yoga? You know, there's a whole raft of them.
It has similarities and differences, I guess, because I have a physiotherapy background. The fundamental difference for me was that our focus was on sort of what we'd call a motor output, you know, training muscles to produce more strength or maybe be more flexible. So it was all very much geared to the output. And in Feldenkrais, what we're saying is, how about we improve the quality of the output by improving the quality of the input, you know, so the feedback. And this comes down to sort of basic engineering principles in a way. Is if you want a system to be able to self-improve, it has to have some data or some information coming back into the system telling it about its performance. So it has to self-monitor. And the clearer that data or information coming back into the system, the better the quality improvement. And, you know, any systems person in any corporation will tell you that. So it's not an unusual concept, but from a therapy point of view, training people to sense better has been completely lacking, certainly been lacking in the fitness industry and most of the movement industries. But I'm happy to say a lot of the sporting people are now starting to come to talk to us and say, look, we've realised actually it's not just about going to the gym and cranking out how many kgs can I lift and how many reps can I do. It's about sensing how can I learn to lift with more quality, how can I learn to lift more efficiently, and that requires learning to pay more attention to the way that I lift, not how much can I lift.
Well, in a Feldenkrais class, the movement through awareness class, as it's called, what I've observed is that the teacher doesn't demonstrate with their own body. They only give movement instructions verbally. Now, why is that?
So this is another intriguing part of it. There's no sort of recipe or set best movement. So what we're asking people to do is sense for themselves which feels better, this way or that way or another way, so that they have to practice making sensory distinctions. They have to practice feeling in order to answer this movement conundrum. So we kind of set them a conundrum, like, you know, roll your arm this way, now roll it that way, which feels easier. In order to answer that question, they have to sense. And they have to sense themselves more and more clearly to get clearer and clearer answers. So what we know now in health is that if you promote this kind of self-efficacy, where the control for improvement or health or well-being resides more in the person, the results are going to be better. Now, some patients find that really daunting, you know, because they're used to being patients and being told what to do.
Yes, but I mean, you often, if you've got something wrong and you go, you know, say to a physiotherapist or whatever, you kind of want them to just tell you what's wrong and what to do.
Yeah. Well, ideally, you want them to give you a pill, don't you? Because that's so much easier. And I think, you know, this is one of the challenges for the method, is we're asking people to be responsible and to learn to be their own personal expert, their own personal trainer, if you like. You know, they've still got experts to consult with. It's not like they're on their own, but we're giving them their bodies back and saying, actually, this body is your responsibility.
And someone who's taking responsibility for her body is Amy Tingay. Amy is 32, she's a social work student, and she has cerebral palsy. As a therapy, Amy uses the Feldenkrais method in sessions with her physiotherapist. First of all, Amy, how does cerebral palsy impact on your body?
It's just meant that I've had a lot of pain, chronic pain. I have to deal with that on a daily basis and come up with different ways to sort of go about my day without it impacting me too much.
So, Amy, how and when did you come to using the Feldenkrais method?
I think it was about 10 years ago. I went to my physio at the time and started doing a different kind of physio, Feldenkrais. Didn't really understand what it was about, and I was a complete cynic. I didn't think it would help me at all. I was very stuck in the medical model, and especially when you've grown up with a disability in that kind of medical model, it's sort of drummed into you that if it doesn't hurt, it's not helping you.
What changed your mind? What happened?
Basically, I didn't believe it was going to work. According to my physio, there was a bit of eye rolling involved and probably some tut-tutting on my behalf. You know, I think I was about 20 at the time. But I just remembered distinctly going back to the train station after the session, thinking, hang on a minute, I can move again now and it doesn't hurt. In a session that I thought we didn't do very much, I was suddenly able to move without pain in a completely relaxed way. I was actually lightheaded, I remember, feeling really freed up. And that was not something I'm very used to, or wasn't very used to feeling at the time.
So now you're in a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
Give me an example of the sort of movement, Feldenkrais movement, that you do that you find beneficial.
I try and move certainly when I'm sitting so that I'm aware of, say, where my, this sounds a bit ridiculous, but where my spine is. And I need to be more aware of how I'm actually sitting in my wheelchair or moving, or if I've got particular pain in my shoulder or my arm, I think, well, okay, why might that be? And then I'll sort of move other bits of me and see if that alleviates the pain in my arm.
So how is this different from traditional therapies for people with cerebral palsy? How is it different from what you grew up with?
I guess traditional physio is more goal orientated. It's more about, we're working towards something, for instance, the ability to walk in a frame unassisted, or the ability to sit up without assistance or something. It's definitely more goal-orientated. So Feldenkrais can be about that for sure, but for me, it's not. And that may have been a conscious thing for me, because I always find it a bit overwhelming to have that constant moving on to goals in regular physio, and didn't feel like you ever got to enjoy your achievements. I always felt like you moved on to the next thing and now you should have been doing that.
I take the point that it's not necessarily goal oriented, but are there things that you can do now that you couldn't do before?
Sometimes at the start of a session I won't be able to move very much at all. But by the end of the session, I'll be much freer and much more able to move. So it's as tangible as that. That's not to say, you know, 2 weeks later, I'm back to being, you know, fairly immobile again. But without that regular intervals of movement, I would be, I believe, far worse off.
So that's the Feldenkrais method used in a therapeutic session with Amy Tingay, who has cerebral palsy. Another application is in the performing arts. The singer here is Stephen Grant. As well as being a bass baritone, he's also a singing teacher, the head of voice at the Conservatorium at Melbourne University, and he's trained in the Feldenkrais method. So how do you apply Feldenkrais to your vocal teaching? Well, actually, let's start with how you've applied it to yourself, to your own singing.
For me, as a singer, it was realizing that there were certain things about my breathing that improved. There were things about my posture, to use that oft-used word, that got better. And also, I felt that there was a change in the resonance of my voice, which at the time was more, you know, sort of, wow, this is amazing. And now I've come to understand it, you know, a lot more deeply.
Okay, so how then, with what you did in terms of your own voice and now the way you're teaching voice, how is this all different then from more standard, more traditional ways of teaching singing? What does Feldenkrais do that other kind of training ways don't?
It's the approach that's really different. So when I started to feel that Feldenkrais was making an impact on my own singing, I began to reflect a lot more about, you know, what are the things in a lesson that happen, generally speaking, of course, teacher gives an instruction, student tries to fulfill it. You know, teacher says, do the following, you do it. No, not like that. Try it again, do it like this. So you try it again, and then you'd hit upon it. And generally, that was the sort of end of the story. It was like, well, you've got it, so now you know what to do. And what I felt through Feldenkrais was actually working out how did I actually get to that step rather than just simply, you know, bingo, performing it and then trying to repeat it, not exactly sure what I did. That, for me, is a really key ingredient. Because as you're doing the method, you're developing your own sensory apparatus. So you're being able to sense more what's going on inside your own body, and thus, of course, your voice as well. Right, so we can see how, in order to do that, you have to keep the air really steady, even though the sound is a bit strange, obviously, when you do that. And the other thing about doing that is it brings us the awareness of where the tongue is, because in order to do a zzz, the tongue has to be right quite far forward. So let's have a little try of that phrase. I'll just give you the end of that bar.
For fantasy.
I guess one of the particular things about singing is that unlike playing a musical instrument or dancing or playing sport, say, it happens on the inside of you. You can't see what you're doing.
That's right. Yeah, you can't. And it's a challenge, of course, and I think that's why singing teaching has been, you know, subject to a lot of wild methods.
Yes, there's all sorts of ways.
Yeah, there's all sorts of ways to do it. And it's largely because there is so much mystery around the instrument itself.
So, say if I was one of your singing students, Stephen, what would you do with me Feldenkrais-wise? Now, please don't get me to sing because no one's going to appreciate that. We'll just pretend on that score. But say, for example, you know, you've mentioned posture. Mm-hmm. So, I understand so far about Feldenkrais that it's not about stand up straight and stick your chest out and put your shoulders back.
Well, I can use an example of a student of mine who has a tendency to move onto one leg whenever she's singing.
And is there something wrong with that?
Well, there's something wrong with it in the sense that it tenses that side of the body. So it's quite asymmetrical from the point of view even of something like breathing. So one side of her body is quite rigid, the other side is a bit more collapsed. So it has implications for the production of sound. There's also then a strong visual message that she's giving, which she may not wish to give in performance. And so in a case like that, I might first say, do you notice that you are doing the following?
And usually the answer is, presumably she doesn't.
No. And then there might be a sort of try singing, keeping your weight on both feet. Often that's impossible in that case, if it's a really deep-seated pattern. So we might do the opposite. We might say, okay, let's take your weight onto the other leg as you sing. And often what happens is because the muscles on the side that have been tensing have suddenly had to let go, often the sound can be quite a bit freer, even in a minor adjustment like that. Now, of course, to make something, a new pattern emerge like that without forcing it to emerge, you know, requires a lot of attention. It also requires quite a bit of practice. And I think there are many, many instances like that. You know, breathing is a huge domain. You know, you must breathe like this, a lot of people say. But I suppose the Feldenkrais question is, you know, how are you breathing? And most people have no idea.
Even singers.
And no idea what they're actually doing, you know. So it's very useful to go into a process in which people can actually feel what's going on rather than just having an idea that they think they're doing the thing that the teacher said. So I might just say, you know, put a hand on your abdomen, put a hand on your chest. What do you feel when you breathe in? What do you feel as you start to sing? And even that can be quite enlightening for students, but they haven't thought about it before.
Okay, so I can do that. I can put my hand on my chest or on my tummy and I can notice how I feel. Hmm. But what do I do with that then? I've noticed.
Well, that's where myself as the singing teacher kicks in, because then I would have a particular idea. I might suggest that, you know, the belly wall has to move in a particular direction. So can you feel that happening would be the first question. And then, can you make that happen if it's not happening? Can you actually engage the belly that way? And sometimes yes and sometimes no. So that's where, in a sense, the work for the student really does take over.
To habituate.
To learn to do the new thing, to scent, but really that sensing. And an ingredient that I think is quite key and tends to be absent, I think, from a lot of music teaching is to go back to the old pattern. So not just, okay, you've learned the new pattern, great, next. But actually, okay, can you feel what it feels like when you do the old thing you used to do? And then can you feel what it's like when you do the new thing? And that really, well, it brings the student to a place where they can make those distinctions for themselves.
Goi sleep am Mond, goi steine Silbe flimme.
Singing student Leighton Triplow in a lesson with Stephen Grant. Stephen's the head of voice at the Conservatorium at Melbourne University and a Feldenkrais practitioner. Returning now to Susan Hillier, who's both a clinician with the Feldenkrais method and an academic in the health sciences. So, Susan, have you undertaken any academic study into the Feldenkrais method?
Yes, I think it underpins a lot of my research interests are really about how can people be the best that they can be. That's sort of, in a nutshell, what I'm interested in. I've really tried to unpack what it is that happens in the Feldenkrais method. So we've done, a lot of different experiments, from just simply, can we just train people to sense better the difference between something really basic, like sense the difference between a cotton bud and a toothpick. And we've particularly done this with people with stroke because that's my interest. And we've certainly got evidence that that can happen. You know, we've looked at then can people learn to sense movements better? And we've done some very simple experiments just with students about if we take them through a basic awareness through movement lesson where they're simply practicing sensing where their hand is in space, like is their finger closer to their thumb now, further away, very basic kind of sensory experiences. And even after 1 hour of training, we did it in a randomized and controlled kind of fashion. If they had practice in sensing where their hand was, then their dexterity, so their hand speed picked up by a significant amount, their hand dexterity improved just with 1 hour of learning to pay attention, but in a very systematic way. So one of our control groups, they also did some body awareness through relaxation techniques, and that didn't affect their dexterity. But this very specific learning to pay attention with very clear instructions and asking these simple questions that I said before, is your finger here or is your finger there? In relation to your thumb, how long is it? How broad is it? These sorts of things that they could improve dexterity. So we do this in a very controlled fashion because obviously, people could say that I have a conflict, but I'm a scientist, I want to know what underlies this. We used blinded assessors and randomized the allocation so that we can be really confident, and I didn't have anything to do with it, We can be confident that it's done in a systematic way so that we can be sure that the effect is what it is and it's not just people being told that it's great so they think it's great.
And Susan Hillier is Associate Professor of Neuroscience and Rehabilitation at the University of South Australia and a Feldenkrais practitioner. There's a couple of links on the Bodysphere website if you want to find out more for the Feldenkrais Guild in Australia and for the Feldenkrais Movement Institute in the US that's run by Frank Wildman, who was with us at the start of the program. Go to abc.net.au/rn. And from there, under Programs, click through to the Bodysphere. I'm Amanda Smith.
Straighten out your left leg, so stretch out your left leg.
Thanks today also to Louise Rothels, the instructor who's taking this Feldenkrais Awareness Through Movement lesson.
See if you can sense your nervous system. Do you feel very calm there lying on the floor? And we're just going to take a little rest. So if you'd like to roll onto your back, what's the effect so far from mobilising all the joints through all this pressing and releasing?